The cold weather has arrived and our days are shorter. It's the season when we move inward into our homes and into ourselves. We come together today in the warmth of worship, seeking and waiting for the light. Today is our Advent Sunday, the season on the Christian calendar when we mark the time of waiting and expectation, when even in the most hopeless of times, the hope for one who comes to bring peace and love, fairness and justice endures. Advent, like Hanukkah and solstice, like Diwali and Kwanzaa, all are seasons when we celebrate the light with beautiful rituals and symbols. And in a similar way, each week we begin our worship with a ritual that celebrates the light. And Jolene, do we have... All right, as Jolene lights our chalice, I invite you to join in the chalice lighting words for this season, which are printed in your order of service. Mike, you're going to do the hand read. Candles, fire, and stars, these are the symbols of this most blessed of seasons. Candles for the banishing of darkness, fires to warm hearth and home, and stars to beckon us, guiding our footsteps to the holiest. In ancient times, candles were mounted on a wagon wheel that was decorated with evergreens, and they were lit during the dark days leading up to the winter solstice, when the return of the light was celebrated. Christians adopted a similar tradition of lighting candles on a wreath during the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, celebrating the light that Jesus brought into the world. Each candle stands for one of the messages of the Advent season. And today we light candles for the first 2 weeks. The first candle for peace in our hearts and in our homes, for peace in our country and in our world, the peace of which the angels sang, and for hope, hope that uplifts our spirits, for hope that gives courage to those experiencing difficult times, hope that we claim for ourselves and hope we bring to others in this season. Thanks. Let us pray that we may be guided by the light of Advent. May we live our lives mindful of the values we celebrate in this season. May we share in the peace, the love, the hope, and joy of this sacred time, and may we bring it to others. Amen. I now invite you to be attentive to a message from our Director of Religious Education, Michelle Cote.
Good morning. Oh, I want to try that again because I heard Mike's voice and one other lone voice. Let's try that really like it's a bright, sunny morning, and maybe the sun will actually come out and be bright if we do that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that was so much better. So today Tom lit this. Mike lit it, but Tom spoke to it. Does anyone remember what this was called? And adults can answer, too. It's an Advent wreath. Does anyone know what Advent is? In the Christian religion, Advent is the time where Christians, people that believe in Jesus and people that believe in God, honor the waiting of Jesus' birth. Because Jesus was born, he wasn't really born in December, but that's when we celebrate his birth. So people wait and practice waiting for the birth of Jesus in honor of that memory. Now, we all wait for things sometimes, right? So I want you all to turn to the person next to you or the person behind you, if there's not one next to you, and talk about one time you've waited for something or waited for to do something or to get something, and just talk about that with them for one moment. Mike's right there. He'll talk to you, right, Mike? Will you talk to Alana?
Okay, Mike.
Go ahead. All right, so did everyone here have something that they've waited for in their life? Okay, so is it easy to wait for things? No, sometimes it's so hard because you want it so bad, and you have to wait, and you have to wait. And guess what? When we talk about Advent and Jesus coming, the people that were Jewish wanted their Messiah, their Savior, to come. And Jesus they believed, their Savior. Guess how long they had to wait for him? James. No, much more than that. Many, many. No, 3,000 to 4,000 years. Okay, can you imagine? Think of how hard it is to wait for just, like, till Christmas from now. Okay, imagine waiting 3,000 to 4,000 years for something. And that's why in this season, Christians honor the birth of Jesus and the waiting for that birth, because they waited so long to have someone come that led them to a direction that they felt was right for them. So in this season, remember that too, that there's people here waiting in this church and in our community, in our world, that will not get what they're waiting for, that will not get what they're hoping for. So every time you think, oh, I have to wait, think there's other people, I have to wait and I will get what I need or what I want, or I'll get to go to the thing that I want to do, that there's lots of people that aren't getting that. So just keep that in your mind as we go through this season. Thank you.
Most of you know that it's our custom here to split our offering that comes in the collection plate each week with a worthy local, national, or international charity, generally one which there's a lot of connection to the church with. And each month it's a different recipient, and once during that month we invite someone from that worthy cause to come forward and tell us a little about it. And today Sophie Wadsworth is going to do that. So Sophie, if you could come up and speak to us about the Nature Connection.
Good morning. So how many of you this morning fed a beloved pet at home? Or perhaps for the rest of you looked out of the window and enjoyed seeing the birds feeding? Unless you spent the night here, as our youth sometimes do, you've already been outside. You've already had more contact with the natural world than the people we visit, the youth and the elders, have had in a month or perhaps longer. So at the Nature Connection, we believe that everyone deserves access to nature. And we believe that everyone, regardless of their ability, regardless of their circumstances, can benefit from nature's healing power. I'm very blessed to work with this nonprofit organization. We're based in Concord, alongside an extraordinary team of volunteers, bringing nature's healing power to the people who need it most. The Nature Connection was founded 33 years ago by an extraordinary group of teachers and artists who recognized nature's unique ability to teach and to heal. I first joined the Nature Connection 10 years ago as a volunteer. I was drawn in by the idea that this group of volunteers were bringing in nature indoors to people that really couldn't sort of leave the confines of those walls. So as we sit here together this morning, nearly 80,000 people across Massachusetts are waking up in chronic care facilities, special needs schools, psychiatric wards, and residential treatment centers. And from our little office, we're reaching out to hundreds of them, at-risk youth, people with disabilities, and elders, including those with Alzheimer's. 12 partner program sites in all, from Lancaster to Cambridge and from Waltham to Marlborough. So how do we do this? We go outdoors and we collect things, milkweed and moss, pine branches and flowers. From our shelves, we might gather deer antlers or a special bird's egg, art materials or boxes of herbs. And then we drive to volunteers' homes to pick up their well-loved therapy animals. And we load them all in a car, a dove, a hedgehog, a soft chinchilla, even a brood of baby chicks. Sometimes we stop by a farm, like Applefield here in Stowe, to borrow baskets of vegetables or gourds. And in springtime, we might visit a volunteer's pond. We have a volunteer right in Stowe to catch and release tadpoles and create a spring pond in a clear tank on wheels, which we then can roll alongside each participant so they can peer in. And finally, with the forest or pond packed up, we drive to the sites. We unload, and the staff and the volunteers create a natural habitat indoors. We're connecting with people of all ages, primarily low income, and from a very wide range of cultures and backgrounds, from urban Boston to Haiti, these people come. We work with at-risk youth at 5 residential schools, including the Robert F. Kennedy Children's Action Corps in Lancaster. Many of these adolescents in these schools have experienced significant trauma and abuse and are unable to cope with their school situation. Can you imagine that? Or are you unable to cope with their living situation? Thanks to our dedicated volunteers, we get to nurture these kids and build their self-esteem. We visit them on a year-long basis every season, either every other week or once a month, and we get to know them. So maybe some of you have seen a finch before. In one program for disabled kids, we brought a little disabled finch, Tilty. So disabled animals can offer a metaphor for what people are struggling with themselves. And we explain this bird has a sort of brain damage and let them look and see how her head is permanently tilted. But she has a beautiful song. Each program, I'm surprised by what the children see in nature. After listening to Tilty for a while, one girl said to me, "I may have bipolar disorder, but I can still sing." By visiting regularly, we witness transformative moments as well as longer transformations stretching across seasons. Maria is a girl with a long history of running away from home. Before her admission to a residential school in Marlboro, the program director shared her file with the staff, and they pleaded the director not to admit her to the school, fearing that she was too volatile for them to be successful. He persisted, and when Maria arrived, indeed, she needed restraint at times to keep her safe and her peers safe. She insisted, "I assault people. I'm a runner, and I'm worthless." But she loved animals. And so, in the Nature Connection, week by week, she got attached to some of our regulars, the therapy rabbit, our dove named Light. And soon she was asking us how to replenish their food and water, learning how to coax the rabbit from its carrier. And she got enough confidence and stability eventually to connect with her peers and her staff caregivers. And after months, she could go safely for the first time beyond the school's walls to volunteer at a local stable caring for horses. By graduation, she had been accepted at Dean College with a full scholarship. We're equally committed to serving our elders, as we know the need for support for elders in our communities, including those with Alzheimer's, is growing very rapidly. We work with elders at 4 sites in Metro West, and one story is a woman elder at a psychiatric nursing ward. We were bringing in a spring program. We had gathered moss and various animals to share. And Esther was someone who, from day one at this psychiatric center, hadn't spoken. So she sat silent. She's withdrawn as usual. She's not interested in the dog. She doesn't look up at the great horned owl. And then Sarah, one of our volunteers, comes around, and her palms are full of thick green moss. It's wet from the forest that morning. And the volunteer, Sarah, she smells the moss herself. And then she says, "Esther, would you like to smell the moss?" It's still wet with last night's rain. And to everyone's surprise, Esther reached out both hands and took the moss and leaned down and smelled that pungent, moist clump in her hands. And then, looking up, she exclaimed, "Emerald green moss." And all of the volunteers and staff stood by in amazement by how this green piece of the forest had touched her so deeply. So the Nature Connections worked with 50 schools and institutions in our history. We're still a grassroots organization, now working with the energy of a startup, I like to say, thanks to the support of our volunteers and partner sites. We are starting to expand and reach out to new sites. We owe our longevity to our supporters, our partner sites, and most of all, our devoted community of volunteers. Our current and past volunteers include members of this church. I see some of you here today. You all make it possible. You help at events, you stuff envelopes, and provide all kinds of critical in-kind support. And most importantly, go out to these sites and spend time season by season with these youth, with these people with disabilities, and with these elders. So we have big dreams over the next decade to further the effort to make nature and animal-assisted therapy widely practiced in Greater Boston and beyond, specifically for those most vulnerable members of our communities. We aim to add 3 new sites and engage dozens of new volunteers and animals so that we can expand our work. Your generosity helps us reach these youth and elders who live right here in our communities.
I'd like to share with you one of my favorite poems of Emily Dickinson, which seems particularly appropriate today, not just in relation to the theme of the service, but also in relation to our plate-sharing recipient, the Nature Connection. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. There have been just a few times in my ministry when, because of what was happening in our world, many folks, it seemed, in the words of that hymn we just sang, found hope hard to find. That surely was the case after September 11th, 2001. It was the case when many lost good jobs and lots of retirement savings when the market crashed in 2008. And right now, after this election, many are feeling a loss of hope. Now, let me state right up front that this is not a political sermon. It's not a prediction on how the president-elect will perform. It's not a critique of those who voted for him or against him. This is a sermon about how many people are feeling now and how we as a community minister to those real and raw emotions. I know not everyone is feeling a loss of hope. In fact, some people are indeed very hopeful. But even if you are one of them, this sermon is still for you, because we are in a time and in a community that is together. Moreover, this sermon is for everyone because in all our lives, there are or there will be times when hope is hard to find. It may be at the level of national or world issues, or it may be much closer to home in our personal struggles with health, relationships, jobs. But there are times for all of us when it's hard to find hope. Now, based on the calls and the emails and the conversations that I've had with folks in the past few weeks, I think hope is pretty hard to find for many right now. And if you are members or allies of the groups that have been targeted with hateful rhetoric in this presidential campaign, I know it's particularly hard for you to find hope. You know, some of you probably remember the wonderful forum we had a couple of years ago on immigration. Do you remember those kids who spoke so compellingly? The Dreamers. Do you remember them? Who were brought to this country as babies by no decision of their own, came to speak to us courageously about their hopes for a Dreamers bill, a bill that would allow them to live their lives as they already perceive themselves legally as citizens in this country. Do you remember them? I suspect they're finding hope hard to find right now. I know many immigrants, many people of the Muslim faith, many black folks or parents of black children are finding hope hard to find. There are many gay couples who fear their marriage could be invalidated and their families illegitimized. Even many women who spoke to me are fearful that they or their daughters will lose the right to make decisions concerning their own body. Right now, many are fearful instead of hopeful about the future, finding hope hard to find. And it's not only true at the collective level. There are many individuals, and maybe you're one of them, who for personal reasons are finding hope hard to find. You have cancer or depression. You're having a lot of pain. You can't find a decent job. Your relationships are falling apart. You're struggling with aging. You're feeling alone. What I'm saying is that I know that sometimes we're in a place where it seems like we're at a dead end. Times when we cannot see really any good possibilities on the horizon. So sometimes living with hope is pretty tough to do. But you know, this season teaches us something else. It teaches us to take a much longer view. It certainly wasn't easy for the Maccabee people whose story we remember at Hanukkah, living under oppressive rule, holding on to hope that freedom was coming, wasn't logical and it wasn't easy. And it wasn't easy to hold on to hope for a Messiah, generation after generation after generation of it not happening. And you know, even way back in pagan times, in the ever-darkening days of December, before we had science that explained the Earth's movement around the sun, it wasn't easy to expect that the light would return again and the days would get longer and the world would get warmer again. Hope has been there throughout recorded time to help people move on to the future from even the very most difficult of times. Of course, there are times when at a rational level, hope doesn't even seem reasonable. Yet this season teaches us that even in the toughest times, we just can't let go of hope. Think about it. What makes a future possible is basically the power of hope. Hope is what fuels and sustains life. In the book of Proverbs, we read, "When hope is lost, the people perish." Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote, "We must accept finite disappointment, but we must never lose infinite hope." And the contemporary black theologian Cornel West, when speaking about the ongoing struggle with racism in this nation, said, "I am not an optimist, but I am a prisoner of hope." So here we are, in the darkest time of the year, when it's not surprising so many of the religions of the world focus on preaching this message of hope. And every year at this time, I can't help but return to that little poem of Emily Dickinson. You know, I first encountered it on a Christmas card from a friend who was facing a lot of challenges but was not giving up. And it's been with me since, especially at times when I felt low, at times when my medical diagnosis wasn't so good, at times when the situations in the world caused me great distress, at times when I felt very fragile. I like it because it speaks just to how I've often felt. In that poem, Emily captures the essence of what I think are two sides of this hope. The first is it's fragile and delicate and even evasive, and it's also, on the other side, persistent and reliable. And you know, I think all of us have known both sides. In Emily's creative imagination, hope is not some great polar bear wrapped in all its winter fur, ready to endure all the elements. But instead, it's a little bird, a delicate thing with feathers, perched precariously on a fragile branch. Yet even through the worst gale, it never stops singing, like that finch. So let's hear those words once again. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asks a crumb of me. You know, it's been a blessing to me to witness those times when hope sang on through even the most difficult storms, the darkest moments. Some of them, some of your darkest moments. When you took the step from severe depression back into the light. When you found the courage to face your addiction. When you were able to feel the great joy of the birth of a child on the heels of the loss of a loved one. When you found a job after nearly giving up looking. When you still saw possibilities for your life, even when things were really not going well. When you found love after hurt. When you were able to reclaim self-respect after abuse. None of those momentous things that happened here could have happened without hope. In many cases, they couldn't have happened without another person bringing some of that hope to you, helping you to reclaim hope. The power of hope for a better time, for a better life, for a better you is so strong that it lifted you out of despair. You know, right now, you can choose to be angry with election results or the world or at God or your family for some hurt you've had. But I don't think that's going to move you forward to a better place. Hope empowers in a way that anger and fear never can. It lifts our hearts and spirits to keep moving on, even when the road is rough and the prognosis is not good. If you're troubled by these times, don't let anger and fear be your guide, but instead hold on to hope for a better time and live your life in ways that make that hope real. If you feel personally defeated, dig deep to find hope. If you're struggling with serious illness, you don't have to let go of hope. Hope isn't always for the cure to everything. It may be for a renewed relationship, a good day, a better time, a chance to live more deeply. If you still have the breath of life in you, you still possess the power of hope. But if you can't quite reach it for yourself right now, let us bring it to you. Let us mean what we sing. I will bring you hope when hope is hard to find, and I'll bring a song of love and a rose in the winter time. And these times together, in our ever-deepening connections as a community of faith, let us bring hope to each other. It's truly the best gift of the season. This season teaches us in so many ways and so many stories the value of this kind of inextinguishable hope. It's a reminder that we should ask ourselves daily, how can we live hope, not just for ourselves, but also for others? In so many ways we do, from bringing food to the food pantry, to providing a community meal as we did last Friday night, to just kind words, to a visit with those experiencing difficult times. All those ways we bring hope, from carrying signs at a peace rally to buying a Christmas gift for a child at the domestic violence shelter, or sending a simple gift bag to a child in India, to sing at a prison, or to the shut-ins in our parish. All those ways are ways of bringing hope. Or we'll do as I will do this week, wiring money to our partner church in Transylvania so they can purchase very basic gifts for the elderly in that poor community, and something with a little joy for children. Those are ways we collectively bring hope. Here in our own community, in the next couple of weeks, our church will likely be helping quite a few folks who, because of economic pressures or sorrows in their lives, are on the verge of losing hope. You know, we don't know who we might be called upon to give some hope to this year, this season. But if past years are any indication of what may come through our door or call on our phone, we will be helping with toys for children who wouldn't get them otherwise. We'll help with food for a holiday table. We might help with a fuel bill for someone's home to keep it warm. We'll probably make visits with plants and some cookies to those who are ill or unable to get out or in mourning. We also give hope by opening these doors and inviting people to come be with us for services like our beautiful Vesper service next week, or our Christmas Eve service, or our loads of fun Mummers Play. Because right here in this room, many people have their heart filled by words and music that brings hope. One of the greatest things we as a church do for members and friends and for the community and for the world, those who are experiencing tough times, is to bring hope. You know, we're not magic. We can't undo tragedy. We can't meet every economic need. We can't solve everyone's problems. But we can bring hope. And it is a very, very powerful gift. Bringing hope to others is at the very core of the message, particularly that our universal forebears told us that we had to preach. John Murray, who's the founder of Universalism, instructed his followers this way: go out in the highways and the byways. Give the people something of your new vision. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. Hope is in fact the promise of the ages. And like the little bird, it never stops singing. Listen for the song when you need to hear it. Share the song when you know others around you need to hear it. We all have challenges, some more than others. These are, in fact, challenging times. Despair can creep in on us. But as Alexander Pope once wrote, hope springs eternal in the human breast. It's planted in each of us. If we nurture it in our lives and in each other's, it will surely guide us through the dark times and will bless us in ways unimaginable. So I ask you, make hope your gift to yourself and your gift to others this season. Claim it and give it away at every chance you get. There really is never too much hope in the world. Just a couple of announcements. The first is next Sunday afternoon we have our wonderful Vesper service. And this year it's really quite unique because we're sort of carrying through our visit to Transylvania. When we were there, Mike purchased a cantata, which is from the German-speaking part of Transylvania, and the choir will sing that, and we'll do some Transylvanian Hungarian music, as well as some wonderful familiar carols. And this is our gift to the community, maybe a gift of hope. So please invite people who would love to sit in some beautiful surroundings of Christmas music with string players, and my partner Malcolm will be organist, and the choir, and wonderful soloists. So 5 o'clock next Sunday, I hope you'll join us for that. It's our Christmas gift, holiday gift to all of you. Our words of benediction are from Oliver Goldsmith. Hope, like the gleaming taper's light, adorns and cheers our way, and still as darker grows the night, emits a brighter ray.
Life lays its task before.